Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. NC State with a big win last night against Louisville, a top 25 matchup. Wild fourth quarter at Reynolds Coliseum. The Carolina Panthers have a new offensive coordinator, and people are very much going, meh. Also, before we log on to the internet, we did not give away the Wordle of the day, okay? We simply discussed it without giving it away. Just saying.
Did someone say we did?
But Scott, you know, make sure you listen to the fan afternoons from 3 to 6 for daily Wordle spoilers from Ovius and Jillian. We didn't spoil anything.
We just said it was slightly X-ray.
That's all we said. That's all we said.
Wow.
We didn't give it away. We gave you a hint. That's all.
Hints are my specialty.
Hints are your specialty, yes. Let's log on to the internet, shall we? Spots by Geico. Get any number of save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest to you. Let's get it.
Number five.
So, number three, Louisville was at Reynolds Coliseum last night. They had a 13-point lead at the half. 14-point advantage going into the fourth quarter. NC State could not buy a three-point shot in the first three quarters. They were 1 of 13 as a team. So you're thinking, nice try. NC State's played this great schedule. This is going to help them down the road, right? Just kind of like that South Carolina loss. And then Diamond Johnson went berserk. NC State ends up winning not only in the fourth quarter 31-8, but ends up winning the game 68-59. Obviously now in the pole position in the ACC women's basketball standings. Johnson ends up with 16 points. Alyssa Conane had 15 and 12 rebounds to go with it. One of those great atmospheres at Reynolds, Joe. Big crowd there. And really not just a big crowd that was gawking and curious. It was a crowd truly into the game. Yeah. And a big comeback by NC State. One of those types of comebacks where you go, hey, are we sure? That's one of those games where you would rewatch on the old ESPN Classic, and you're like, yeah, State doesn't win this game. Louisville wins this game, right? Like, what are you talking about? But 31-8 in the fourth quarter.
So, Wes Moore, we talked to Wes Moore, NC State basketball coach, earlier in the show today. If you missed that, it's available on the Best of the OG podcast. After the game, he was asked, you know, what exactly he told his team at halftime after Louisville had been taking it to him.
We may dig a hole again, you know, and you can draw from this. At halftime, I reminded them probably about 4 years ago, we came in here and, you know, right before the game, I'm downstairs and Coach Avent comes by. He's, you know, he sees me down there before I come up on the court. Why are you so nervous, you know? I said, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, we could go out there and just blow up or something, you know? And sure enough, we fell down. It was either 23-1 or 25-1. I can't remember which. Against Louisville, okay? It was just like we could not hit a shot. Well, we came back with 3 minutes in the game, left in the game. We were down three and had the ball. We didn't win it, but I just reminded them at halftime, you can either keep doing what you're doing and be totally embarrassed, or you can do something really special. And they chose to do something special, thank goodness.
So, yeah, they did do something special, and it was a pretty wild scene at Reynolds Coliseum. That full conversation we had with Wes Moore, NC State basketball coach, it's available now on the Best of the OG podcast. Next up.
Number four.
Speaking of college basketball coaches, Wes Moore, happy with his team coming back in the fourth quarter.
Happy with
Penny Hardaway.
Happy with his old team, too, Joe, his veteran team.
Yes. That's kind of the beauty of women's college basketball. You can actually have an older team because it's not a one-and-done type thing in women's college basketball. But in men's college basketball, you are judged based on what you do with this freshman talent. And, you know, we see this with Duke and the group that they brought in. And that's why Mike Krzyzewski has his farewell tour, right? You know, we judge, you know, North Carolina based on the freshman talent they bring in and how they come along. But don't do that to Penny Hardaway at Memphis, who brought in one of the top talented basketball classes. But they've had a really bad season. They did lose to ECU this past weekend. They lose again last night. And when he was asked about the situation, Penny decided to say, stop asking, like, just stop. Just don't ask me any more questions.
I think the one thing I can say to this media, because this media gets kind of up sometimes when it comes to me, we don't have our full roster. Y'all know we don't have our full roster. Stop asking me stupid questions about if I feel like I can do something. If I had my roster like they did, then I feel like I can do whatever I want to do. I'm coaching really hard. My boys are playing really hard. I'm not embarrassed about nothing. We have four freshmen starting. Y'all need to act like it. Act like we got 17 to 18 and 19 year olds out here trying to learn how to play against 22, 23 and 24 year old guys. Come on, man. Stop disrespecting me, bro. Like, don't do that. I work too hard. I work way too hard for that. Y'all write all these articles about me and all I do is work. We got young kids on the floor. They got young kids on the floor.
This legitimately sounds like somebody responding to like tweets that he's like following as the game goes. Like, I'm only just imagining this is like if Keats ever really got blackout drunk reading all of these tweets about State fans, he'd be like, that almost sounds like Pete Davidson and Colin Jost. Like, what? That sounds like an SNL skit. Did he really do that?
So the thing is. Okay, so I'm like both ways on this with Penny. He's right in that there are a lot of factors that go into why Memphis is having the season that they're having. All right? And I don't think anybody's questioning whether they're working hard or not, or he's not doing what you need to do and those types of things. So I do feel like Penny gave an answer that a lot of coaches would like to give if they could. You mentioned Kevin Keats. You tell me that Kevin Keats wouldn't like to just say, what the blank and blank you think I'm doing over here, guys? You want to look at my position group in the front court? I lost another guy to an injury. What do you want? Right? So I get that perspective. However, Penny, no. You're in the running for these top recruits. College basketball is based on what you do with these top recruits. And if you're not, I think it's perfectly fine to question what the hell is going on at Memphis if you can't string together a winning season. It's one thing to have some disappointment. You know, talk to John Calipari about not living up to the hype and expectations of a recruiting class. It's another to have embarrassing loss after embarrassing loss like Memphis has right now, including that loss to ECU. So it's one of those weird, like, I could see both sides of it. I commend Penny Hardaway for giving an honest answer like that, but yeah, it's not going to end well for him. This has been viral all day. Next up.
Number three.
I can't tell you how many times during the rescue squad season, 15-16, when Terry Henderson got hurt, and he made 8 3-pointers in the secret scrimmage against Richmond. And Mark Godfrey would call me and tell me, like, every day that season, you know, Terry Henderson made 8 threes against Richmond in the secret scrimmage. You know, if we only had Terry Henderson. Like, but he was calling me and basically to vent, not in the press conference. Like, what do you expect from me? Well, first of all, you probably don't have any 17-year-olds. Let's get a little math check on that one, first of all, okay? I know my wife's screaming right now because she was 17 when she started in college, but you probably don't have that many 17-year-olds on your team, number one. Number two, like, if you want Amani Bates and you want James Wiseman, guess what? With great, you know...
Great power comes great responsibility
here, yep. Penny.
That's the thing. Like, this is what you signed up for. This is what you want.
What are we doing? What? I don't.
Come on, man.
Buddy, come on. Stop asking. Have you seen?
I mean, last year, Duke had a top class. It was a pandemic season. It went to hell in a handbasket, and people were clowning Mike Krzyzewski about this. Do you think he sweated that? No, he just got back. He went back out there, brought this other class that's doing pretty well. I mean, they did lose to Florida State, but my goodness, man. Anyway,
it's like 16 years old now. But have you ever seen the actor Tom Wilson who played Biff on Back to the Future? He does stand-up comedy and he sings a song called "Stop Asking Me the Question."
Yeah.
It's hysterical. It's. Did Michael J. Fox really make out with his mom? Stop asking me the question. Stop
asking me that question.
You guys need to stop asking me these stupid questions. He said that in a real press conference.
But he did make out with his mom in Back to the Future.
Spoilers!
Just saying. All right. Next up.
Number three.
That requires me being ready for number three, Joe.
Uh-huh.
North Carolina has a Q1 game coming up on Saturday night. Winston-Salem, they're playing against Wake Forest. Carolina's winless in their four Q1 games this season. It's rare that we think of North Carolina in this context, Joe, but it feels like a must-win game on Saturday.
I thought this week was must-win week.
Well, this week was a show-me week for the Tar Heels.
It really was.
Two Q1 games. Miami moved up into the top 75, so that's now a Q1 loss. But how many more of these are there? You got the two Duke games. They do go to Virginia Tech, who's holding strong. But they're running out of these opportunities to kind of stack some good things up in that Q1 column on their NCAA tournament resume. Of course, Hubert Davis is worried about bigger picture things, given the response to the Miami game and the Miami loss, talking about leadership. As he said with us today, in case you missed that interview, you can catch that on the Best of the OG podcast. He said, like, look, man, I got to worry about what's in front of me. I can't worry about Q1s and all those other, all of your other NCAA jargon, Jillio.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about talking with Hubert Davis, I know there was an exchange today with Inside Carolina's Greg Barnes and Coach Hubert Davis as it relates to the inability to create turnovers, which, as we know, with North Carolina, they're better teams. And how they initiate their offense, you know, it's predicated on fast break and creating turnovers and everything else, live ball turnovers. And they just, I think it's like they're on pace to have like this historic low. And Hubert just wasn't all that interested in the stat in the exchange. But I think you just kind of referenced it. I think right now, Hubert Davis is more concerned with, I need a dude to step up more than anything else before we worry about the ins and outs of statistics and various other things. They need a guy in the room who can tell them to get their act together, have some pride, and go out there and win. We've had this conversation with the Tar Heels before. They say the right things. They might have a game where they show you they're going in the right direction, but until they consistently do this, especially on the road against good teams, then it's just empty words. Next up.
Number two.
So the Carolina Panthers now have an offensive coordinator after Matt Rhule went for the splash hire, Joe Brady, and that did not work out, and they let him go in the middle of the season. They've gone in the opposite direction of getting somebody with a lot of experience. But the problem is the Carolina Panthers have the problem of a head coach who doesn't look like he's long for the job, so that limits the pool of potential candidates. So they end up with former Giants head coach Ben McAdoo. Now, what's interesting, according to Joe Person of The Athletic, Ben McAdoo had interviewed for the quarterback position job, for the quarterback's coach job, the last 2 years, did not get it. So he wasn't good enough for the quarterback's job, but now he's the offensive coordinator. Kind of tells you where things are in Charlotte. Also interesting about Ben McAdoo hire. Let's go back to July 13th, 2018. Headline, Ben McAdoo doesn't like the way Sam Darnold throws the ball. Oh, who's his quarterback? Sam Darnold. Quote, I think the kid the Jets drafted has a lot of magic in his game. I think he's special. He's obviously a talented guy. He can make plays with his feet. I just have a hard time drafting a guy in the first round when you don't necessarily like the way he throws. He can overcome it, guys have, but that's something that's a challenge for me. I'm going to have to look at that, trying to fix it, because it's a fundamental flaw, and I believe in the fundamentals. The quarterback, his number one job is to pass the football. If I don't like the way he throws the ball, I have a hard time picking him, right? By the way, Ben McAdoo had Josh Allen, who was taken by the Buffalo Bills with the 7th overall pick, as his top quarterback in that class. Quote, high ceiling. He was a second-rated player. And second-rated player was Lamar Jackson. Went to the Ravens, obviously. So,
are they going to let Ben McAdoo draft? Or?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, McAdoo seems to get it, right? He seems to get it. He's not clearly wasn't head coach material in New York.
But do we know that?
That Eli?
He screwed up the Eli thing.
You referenced this when we talked about it earlier. You just can't cast aside the Eli Manning thing in New York. Like that requires a certain level of finesse.
But
you can't do Eli Manning like that in New York.
Okay, here's the thing. I have been on a soapbox all year about the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin not having the temerity to stand up to ownership about Ben Roethlisberger and his decrepit state of his game. And that they didn't need to go through this year to give him a farewell tour. That's basically what Ben McAdoo did to Eli Manning. It just so happened to be in the middle of his second season. They went 11-5 in his first year as the head coach. He was Tom Coughlin's OC, okay? They had a down year in 15. Coughlin retires. He was on Coughlin's staff when the Giants won the Super Bowl, second Super Bowl under Coughlin. Head coach in 16, they go 11-5. He doesn't even make it through year two. He is like the exact opposite of Matt Rhule, who's 10-23.
Yeah.
I think this is just a Shakespearean play by Tepper, bringing together the one coach who can't be fired with the one who goes 11-5 and doesn't even make it through year two.
Yeah. The issue for McAdoo and Manning to relitigate what happened back in 2017,
yes.
The season was done. They had five games left. They benched him. The problem is who they put in.
Yes, that is truly the problem. Yes.
That was the
problem. It was basically you're ending this long starting streak. And he was being disrespectful.
Yes.
Because
and they put Geno Smith instead. And there's a lot more context to Geno Smith and the Jets and everything else. That leads to that being a little bit more of a sore subject. And mention the starting streak and everything else. These were meaningless games at that point. Just let Eli Manning start. So it was not exactly handled with finesse. Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one.
Well, speaking of McAdoo's guy of that draft, Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills, they're going to try to continue their hot streak against the Kansas City Chiefs. The issue that I have, Giulio, is that I want to pick the Bills in this game against Kansas City. The issue is that the Bills are a very streaky team, whereas the Chiefs, more than any other team, have been a model of consistency. Yes, they started the year off poorly. Their defense eventually got fixed. Patrick Mahomes has also settled down. Buffalo, given their streakiness, can get out to an early lead against Kansas City. I just don't know if they can have, you know, that's a letdown game for Buffalo waiting to happen. Like, you just don't go out and have this perfect game against that New England team and all the hype that went along with beating the Patriots in the playoffs and then be able to kind of follow that up against Kansas City. Now, if you beat Kansas City, things certainly open up for you, but man, that's going to be tough.
I would agree with you under different circumstances. If they had never seen Kansas City before, I agree with you. They beat Kansas City earlier this regular season. They were eliminated by Kansas City last year in the AFC Championship game. So you can apply the same principles of motivation from the New England inferiority complex that you can to Kansas City. I'm with you on principle. It is going to be difficult for them to duplicate anything close to their perfect game performance that they had against the Patriots. But I think the way that they are situated on defense, remember, they are a bend, don't break defense. They lead the NFL in passing yards allowed per attempt, meaning they're going to just sit two guys back and say, you want all this stuff underneath? Take it. Be patient. You can have it. But you're not getting anything over the top. And that Sean McDermott's the one who came up with that. He's the one who came up with the Mahomes code here, if you will, the Mahomes rules. So I don't think Mahomes is going to be patient enough to win this game in the way that he has to win this game. I like that it is a run it back game as well. I think we've seen Buffalo excel in this situation. The question is going to be what will they do? Because we know Buffalo can't have nice things. If they find their way to Los Angeles, whoo, there aren't going to be enough adult toys. There aren't going to be enough flaming tables to contain the Bills Mafia.
Derrick Henry is going to be back for the Tennessee Titans in their game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Again, that's another one of those games where just how streaky will the Bengals continue to be or not be, and can they contain? It's not like Cincinnati's defense is, you know, the thing that got them here. The thing that got them here has been Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow being cool under pressure. Can they contain Derrick Henry? Not a lot of teams can do that. And then we got the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers. In a way, you get to a point where you can look at the game any number of ways, and then you start to wonder, well, why will something happen? Like Buffalo, right? Like, they can get to the Super Bowl. What terrible thing could happen to the Buffalo
right.
Bills because they can't have nice things, right? For me, I think we're kind of entering into that territory with Aaron Rodgers, where the Green Bay quarterback did a 28-minute phone call with an ESPN reporter today. And I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but I'll do the too long didn't read version of this. I'm Aaron Rodgers. I watched The Joker once, and now I want to be the disruptor. It's such a shallow level of intellect being shown by Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, he talked about why he does things when he goes on with Pat McAfee, because he knows that the internet's going to react in a way, and there are going to be people that are going to try to cancel him, but there's also going to be people that promote him. And he's just showing you the ridiculousness of this all. And he's the free thinker. Like, yeah, whatever. He's trying to make this out to be some larger point that he's been making this entire season. Nah, dude, you're not making any larger point. You acted like a jerk to the Packers this offseason. You sought the attention. You got the attention. You continued to seek out attention. And, you know, I don't even get into the whole COVID thing either. This is one of those, it'll eventually catch up to you and people are really going to enjoy it when you lose. And I think that's kind of where we are right now with the Green Bay Packers. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're not the fully healthy team that we've grown accustomed to with Tom Brady. They're still finding ways to win, obviously, but the Rams defense is going to be the true test of just how much this Bucs team can overcome some of these issues. I still think the Buccaneers are going to win because I'm going to trust Tom Brady more than I'm going to trust Matthew Stafford in a big game. But man, that defense is going to be something ridiculous on Tom Brady, who has not taken a lot of hits this year.
No, and the injuries for Tampa are up front at center and at right tackle. I know Whitworth is not going to play for the Rams. They're left tackle, so could be something there. But if this is a Von Miller, Aaron Donald kind of game. This is a money's on the table kind of game. We'll see how they respond.